And then it was time for him to do his bhiksha. He was a Brahmin, so he just lived by begging. And he had no children, but he had a household, he had a wife. So he stopped the work and he told his wife, I'm going out to beg. And they haven't been doing very well over the previous weeks and months, which was another problem why he was thinking, here I am, I'm completely devoted to the Lord, I'm doing his work, I'm propagating Bhagavad Gita, and we're hungry, we don't have anything to eat. And when I go out to beg, I get nothing. No one gives us anything. Give us a little, just a little handful of rice. We don't get no sabji, no ghee, no anything. So anyway, he went and he went out again. And he went out and he went on his errands. And meanwhile, the wife was there going about her housework. And then there's a knock on the door. And she opens the door. And there's these two boys there. And they're carrying, you know, in India they carry across on your shoulder. You have a stick and you have baskets. And they're carrying two baskets of all kinds of vegetables and spices and grains and ghee and cheese. And they have all these things. And first she doesn't even notice them because she doesn't notice those other things because the boys look so beautiful. And one is dark-skinned and the other one is light-skinned like that, fair complexion. And she says, who are you? He says, we live in town and we met your husband and he made us carry these heavy things because they were very heavy and the boys, they were just little boys. And the wife said, my husband made you carry all of these things. She thought, yeah, maybe he struck it rich and someone gave him all these things. And she said, yeah, he forced us. She said, he forced you. And the smaller boy, who was dark complexion, he says, yeah, he forced us and he even hit me on the back. And he turned around and he showed that he had scars on his back as if he was hit by a stick. And she couldn't believe it. She said, my husband never hits anybody. She says, how can he do something like this? So she got very worked up like this. Worked up, hit these poor innocent children. So she brought them in and she sat them down. She said, you sit down, I'm going to cook. And she cooked and she fed the boys. And when they finished eating, they went away. And then her husband comes back. He's got nothing in his hand. Comes in and he sees there's all this cooking going on. And of course, as soon as his wife sees him, she starts to chastise him. He says, how can you beat those little boys? He says, how can you be so cruel, hearted? How can you be so bad? And he doesn't even know what's going on. What little boys? He says, who did I beat? I've just been out all day long, going door to door. Hardly I collected anything. But then she said, well then, who are those little boys? Who sent them with all of that? Look, all these things, big, big pile of food in the kitchen. Anyway, so he asked her to explain the story, and she started telling them, and then Arjuna tried, so just tell me, what did they look like? So then she started to describe what they looked like. And then he realized that it was Krishna and Balaram. They had come. Prabhupada tells the story a few times. You can see, he liked that story. And then Arjunacharya realized, oh, I've made a big mistake. That by scratching out Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. So that's caused the marks on Krishna's back. And just in order to prove that Krishna will personally carry, Krishna and Balaram came and they carried on their shoulder the food that we needed. So he offered his obeisances and he begged forgiveness from the Lord, and then he explained what actually happened to his wife also. you can try it. You can just sit down and say, I'm going to sit here until Krishna and Balaram knock on my door. You just have to get ready that usually Krishna waits till the last moment. He may be very thin by then. But yoga kshema vahami aham. So our principle, which Srila Prabhupada just emphasizes unlimitedly over and over again, is that if we do yajna, if we perform sacrifice, then all our necessities are taken care of, because that's not what life is about. Life is not about struggling hard to feed yourself. That's for the animals. For human beings, life is about self-realization. And Krishna makes it easy for human beings. He gives them intelligence so that they can, as Prabhupada would say, work as little as possible so that they can spend the balance of their time cultivating spiritual life, and that they can go back home, back to Godhead. So Krishna does make it easy. And in the ultimate issue, yoga kshema vahami aham, he'll carry it himself. He'll bring it to the devotee. Just like Krishna is, same principle, Krishna is driving Arjuna's chariot. So Arjuna could have got other people to drive the chariot. Of course, no one, Krishna was the best chariot driver. He and Shalva were the two best chariot drivers in the world at that time. Of course, Krishna is the best at everything. But still, Krishna did it. He drove the chariot, which meant that he was standing in the front. So, and Kshatriyas don't shoot at you from behind unless they're breaking Kshatriya codes. So that means everyone who's shooting at Arjuna in the front, the first thing they're going to hit is Krishna. So that's why Krishna was always covered in all kinds of arrows and so on, and weapons. Of course, Arjuna would block those arrows with his, but those that he didn't, there was a good chance that they would hit Krishna first. So yoga kshema bahami aham. So this formula is there, evam pravartitam chakram nanu varta hati haya. Evam pravartitam chakram. This is the system. If you perform sacrifice, your necessities of life are taken care of. I said the necessities. Not what you want. Just what you need. So there used to be a famous rock band who had a song. He says, you get what you can't get, always get what you want, but you get what you need. So Krishna will give you what you need, or at least what he thinks that you need, which may be different than what you think that you need. But whatever we need, Krishna will provide. And that then becomes part of a devotee's austerity, as later at the end of the Gita, Krishna says, satisfaction is the austerity of the mind. Training ourselves to be satisfied with what comes naturally of its own accord. So what is it that something that comes naturally of its own accord, that you never, I was going to use the word sacrifice, but you never give up sacrifice, and say you don't give up sacrifice for something else. If there's anything that we need to do, then we give up other things, but we never give up our activities being an offering to Krishna in any way. Our eating, our sleeping, our work, our recreation, our everything that we want to do it in a way that it's always a sacrifice, and therefore our whole existence becomes pure, and we then become the offering. So it's like you pour the ghee into the fire. So that means our life becomes the fire, and we become the offering in that fire for pleasing Krishna. And in that way, then it's sort of understood. It's understood. Prabhupada didn't make a big thing out of that we're going back to Godhead. It was just a fact. You follow what Krishna says, then Krishna says, Tesham Nityavya, excuse me, Maha. Krishna says, I'm giving you my promise. So what, then why make a big thing of it? If Krishna is already promising that you'll come to me, then in the meantime, we just do our business here in the world and try to especially give Krishna consciousness to others. Because our fate is already sealed in a very positive way, provided that we follow the system of sacrifice that's outlined here in the Gita, and especially that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is further fine-tuned. Hare Krishna. Comments or questions?
May I please ask, how can the recreation be offered as a sacrifice?
Just like we have some sports, not all sports, but some sports, like swimming is a sport that devotees do. And you need a change. Change is also part of life. You have to, like Srila Prabhupada would say, don't work in the same room that you live in. You should change. You should go from one room to another. So similarly, we work, and we also need a change of pace. So when Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur or in Jagannath Puri, then he was encouraging the devotees to enjoy themselves in the water and like that. Why? Because you need a change of pace. And then how do you do that? Yes, because that makes for someone being a wholesome person, and it's the wholesome person that we're offering to Krishna, so it becomes a sacrifice. And then, of course, there has to be, things have to be in balance. That doesn't mean that all of a sudden we become sportsmen, because Prabhupada talks about frivolous sports. So also it's, but that there's some type of balance, or that, you know, we go for walks. Prabhupada would go for a walk every day. So why? Because it had to do with his being fit, and his being fit had to do with serving Krishna. So health is first. But of course, there has to be balance. Everything has to be in moderation. We shouldn't be in too much anxiety. Because if your mind is too disturbed, you can't be peaceful. So our life should be such that we don't take on too many responsibilities that cause too much anxiety. Just too much anxiety, because then you can't chant Hare Krishna if you have too much anxiety. Well, Prabhupada came in 1975. Prabhupada came to Toronto in Canada, and at that time devotees were living in a temple. It was bigger than this. It was like this size, but it was three stories high, maybe three and a half stories high. And it was like crowded. At night, devotees slept on the stairs, every stair. So the pujari, when they got up early in the morning, had to like walk over people to get to the bathroom. So it was very full. And devotees found a big temple, which is the temple that we have now on Avenue Road, which is like one of the main streets going into Toronto, if not the, well, one of the main streets. It's like hundreds of thousands of people go there, pass by every day, pass by the temple. It's called Avenue Road Church. And so when Prabhupada saw the plans, they were, showed him the plans, and they said, this is going to cost, $300,000 or something like that. And then the temple president said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, it's really, Prabhupada looked at it and he said, it's good. It said it would be a really big effort for us to be able to make those type of payments, which means we have to pay, I don't know, $20,000 every quarter or something like that. that really cause a lot of anxiety. And Prabhupada says, no, that's not good to be in too much anxiety, so let's forget it. Devotees shouldn't be in anxiety. But then the next day Prabhupada said, anyway, let's go see it. So when Prabhupada saw it, his eyes really lit up. And he says, I think we should get this place. And then Saint Temple Prince of Prabhupada yesterday said that it's not good for us to be in anxiety to make the payments on this place. Prabhupada said, it's good to be in anxiety for Krishna. He says, I think we should get this place. they got the place. But Prabhupada makes reference in different places. Yes, if the mind's too disturbed, then how can you think of Krishna? How can you listen to the holy name? How can you make those necessary adjustments that require a clear mind and a clear intelligence? So then, one does not over-endeavor. Over-endeavor means getting entangled in things that make life too complex or too difficult, and then make sacrifice too difficult to perform. You don't go off into a desert to perform a sacrifice. There's no wood. I've got to walk 10,000 miles just to get some wood for a sacrifice. There's no cows. There's no ghee. No, you perform a sacrifice in a place where there's wood, where there's ghee, where there's so many other things are easily available. Hare Krishna.
I want to ask if karma is performing austerities without offering or without doing them for Krishna, do they get some benefits from these activities?
Austerity always has some type of benefit. According to the purpose for which it's performed, according to whom it's being offered, you get a corresponding benefit. And if austerities are performed in the mode of ignorance, because Krishna talks about austerities in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, in the mode of goodness. So austerities in the mode of ignorance are some things that, you know, people do to acquire black magic and tantric skills and end up harming other people. They get results and they end up, for instance, worshipping ghosts and spirits and other types of things. Or even if it's not even that person connected, still by austerity one learns a certain semblance of self-control, because that's what austerity will mean. But it may not have any connection to spiritual advancement. And then people like Hiranyakashipu perform austerities in the mode of passion because they want to enjoy, and then they worship demigods. And devotional austerity in the mode of goodness is for the purpose of spiritual advancement. And ultimately, spiritual austerity is to please Krishna. That's the best type of austerity. All of them have a different result. When you perform austerity in the mode of goodness to advance in spiritual life, that's what happens. You advance in spiritual life. You become purified. When you perform austerities in the mode of passion, you become entangled in material existence. Not only you become entangled in material existence, but the persons who give the benediction, they become entangled. Like when Lord Shiva gave this Rikasura the benediction, whoever's head he touches is going to explode, so that it came back on him. Same thing, Lord Nrsimhadev told Lord Brahma, don't give these stupid benedictions anymore to these people. You're getting in trouble, and you're getting everybody else in trouble. Why? Because things in passion and ignorance always have so many side effects that ultimately the side effects become more problematic than the benefit that you get. But things in the mode of goodness are always favorable, and they're always conducive, and they're beneficial for everybody. And of course, when things are done spiritually, when things are done for Krishna, then they also elevate others and they benefit others. So we chant Hare Krishna, and people hear, and so they're advancing spiritually. Even when we're chanting here, still the vibration is being purified, and unconsciously people are benefiting from that. Anything else?
Does the desire to preach come naturally as you follow Krishna consciousness, or you have to struggle at the beginning to go and preach to others first?
You may struggle generally. Generally, for devotees, it may be like that. It may be a struggle. It may be an austerity. It may be some kind of psychological issues or personality issues that they have to overcome in order to preach to others because they're not habituated to it. But we do it because it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, because it's Prabhupada's order, and therefore we do it to please them. But as one chants Hare Krishna offenselessly, then naturally one recognizes that preaching is integral to advancing in Krishna consciousness. Jiva Doya Krishna Na. If you really want to, as Prabhupada would say, the secret of getting Krishna's attention is preaching. So by chanting Hare Krishna, we're trying to get Krishna's attention. But if you compound that with preaching, then it becomes easier to get his attention when you're chanting Hare Krishna. You had something?
How right is it to associate material opulence with Krishna consciousness? Because it said also in the previous verse that opulence is a consequence of performing sacrifice. And also at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya says that wherever is Krishna, there is opulence, victory, and morality. So how right is it if you see an opulent person to say he must have some connection with Krishna?
But that connection may be indirect. In other words, his connection is if someone's a non-devotee, then his opulence is a result of his past karma and his present karma. And when his karma runs out, he's going to lose his opulence. For a devotee, for instance, like Yudhisthira Maharaj, then Krishna arranges his opulence. And for a Vaishnava, it's just like in Krishna book, it says no one can, even the demigods can't take away their opulence. But Krishna does, if he feels that it becomes an obstacle for their spiritual life. So opulence may be there, it may not be there. It's ultimately up to Krishna. Krishna will give what he thinks is good for someone's spiritual advancement. So Sudama Vipra came home, and then all of a sudden, after a life of poverty, he saw that he was this great palace and everything. So then and when he's praying to Krishna, he's saying that Krishna knows what's good for devotee. And if he thinks that the opulence will be counterproductive, then he won't give it. And there's no point in arguing with him. Because Krishna always gets his way. That's something we need to get used to. You can't try to argue with Krishna. All you can do is surrender. So yes, opulence can be there, but opulence shouldn't be a obstacle. And it can be an obstacle if one is not properly situated. Janma Aishwarya Shuti Shibir Edamana Manapunan Naivar Hatyavidatum Vaitvam Kinchana Gochara. And neither, Queen Kunti says, neither wealth, high birth, education, these things don't attract Krishna. So Krishna doesn't need opulence. Tvam Kinchana Gochara. Therefore, it's described that Krishna is conquered by those who are materially impoverished. So material impoverished, how is a wealthy devotee materially impoverished? Is that for him, money means nothing. Sama lostasa kanchana. So Krishna says that for a self-realized soul, dirt and gold is the same. It's just a different type of earth. So for him it means nothing. To use it in Krishna's service, then it has some value, and that's all. That's the only value. It has no inherent value. Gold has no inherent value. It's just an arbitrary thing that we've accredited to gold. And of course, the better example is paper currency. That really has no value. But we've just stamped it and says, this is worth 100 euros, and therefore we think, oh, it's worth. I have something of value. You have nothing of value. And Prabhupada would comment that this is the real foolishness of the modern economic system. Previously, it used to be gold standard. That's how this started off. That, and it would be there. It started off in England. That it's, you know, this 1 pound is equivalent to so much gold, and there's so much current gold or silver, and you can cash it in at the bank. And it used to be like that even, I think, in the mid-50s, you take your money and you cash in for this much gold. Now, there isn't currency, there isn't gold to back up the currency. What's it called? Gold standard. It doesn't work like that anymore. So it's worth nothing. But gold's worth nothing either. And wealth is nothing. It's just a relative thing. What does wealth mean? What does opulence mean? So tvama kinchana gochara. The real wealth for a devotee is Krishna. If he has Krishna, he's wealthy. If he doesn't have Krishna, then everyone's a pauper. Okay. But in when they were still relatively young, before Pandavas were married, and Yudhisthira Maharaj and Krishna were conversing, and they were talking about the future, and Yudhisthira about how, of course, Yudhisthira Maharaj is the one who should be inheriting the world. So Krishna says, sometime in the future you'll inherit the world. And then Yudhisthira Maharaj said, yes, and I want to be the wealthiest king that ever lived. And I want to have the most beautiful wife. And I want to have the biggest palace. And I want to have the most powerful army. And Krishna was just sort of looking at Yudhisthira Maharaj. He says, why? And he says, why do you want all these material things? He says, I don't want them. But if people think that by being your devotee, you get a beautiful wife, you get a palace, then everyone will become a devotee. So Krishna says, okay, then. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur-Nitai ki jai. Jai Nitai Gopinandi.
Shri Varamahara ki jai.
Hare Krishna.